You're listening to Dig Deep. We've been talking about compromise. This is a podcast edition, so we let loose a little bit, unbuttoned a few buttons, yo, and we're ready to go.
I am cutting loose right now.
Yeah. Me too.
Oh, gosh.
Hey, I realized I said this in the last podcast. I get to say it again.
Okay.
I got to pick up the boys in half an hour.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's
no, good. I actually have to go get the girls, so we're good.
Okay.
So you said, like, I would be interested to see what our Congress could do today if they basically they didn't have to deal with crazy man in the White House.
But not just him. Yeah. Not just him, because you could have said the same thing about Obama, who arguably wasn't crazy.
Right.
But what if this kind of hyper-political, what if Congress had to go into an arena somewhere in rural America, some faraway place, and there was a few reporters there to write down what happened. But other than that, no Klieg lights, no tweets, just people.
So what if we had a constitutional convention where we stuck them all in a place and said, you got to figure this out?
Not just constitutional, but like, let's figure out immigration. Let's figure out, like, let's figure out some of these policies.
But I think we could obviously, I think they'd come up with something, right? I mean, wouldn't they?
I would think so.
Yeah. But you're, and I don't want to impugn the idea because I think the.
But I'm being naive, of course.
Right. Because that can never happen.
Right. Exactly. Right. And I wonder because I wonder how we could replicate at least part of those conditions in our real world.
But I feel like if we took Palestinians and Israelis and took like a select amount of them and put them in a room together and said, you guys are not leaving till you figure this out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a Catholic. This is basically what, like, you know, they do after the Pope dies. They put all these guys in a room and they say, like, we're literally locking the doors and you're not coming out till you pick a new Pope. And even though in modern times this hasn't been, you know, a big deal, there were people killed and all kinds of things in the past. I mean, this was like, who's going to run the world as we know it? You know, this is high stakes stuff. So, yeah, I mean, there's precedent for doing that.
Well, yeah, and I'm not trying to make that like maybe that took a turn. Like, I don't expect like bloody conclave to be the solution here, but
bloody conclave would be kind of
title of your autobiography.
Bloody conclave or Thunderdome, yeah,
or your band,
yeah, or my band. But I wonder if you know, like, I've covered city councils and things, and maybe this is feeding into your argument about the localization rather than the centralization of some of these arguments. But I've covered like city council debates where there have been some contentious issue and factions that think one thing and factions that think another thing, and you know, ultimately they have to vote and they ultimately do vote and some decision is made. There's an election that follows that often is directly related to that vote, and it either confirms or rejects the decision that those councilors made. How can we get back to that at a federal level? You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think inherent with that, and I'm gonna add on to what you said. Inherent with that is a lot of times, people who vote in the city council make the wrong decision. And a lot of times voters make the wrong decision. There's a lot of wrong decisions made.
Yeah.
And I think my sense of, you know, how do we get things more localized is more of an understanding of the fact that I don't think there is a specific right decision, but I think like a series of partially right and partially wrong decisions. Like, I'd rather have, if we just look at states, I'd rather have 50 partially right and partially wrong decisions than one like decision that we know is flawed. You know, like, I'd rather have 50 flawed experiments than one flawed experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think with 50 flawed experiments, we can actually kind of emerge from that best practices, good ideas. Like, this really worked over there. I think you have to have a really dark view of humanity to not think like that's a good way of doing things, you know?
I thought that was interesting because and it's come up in this discussion about Obamacare, and we're now looking back at Obamacare being it's like 8 years old now. It's getting to be
it's a law of the land.
It's a law of the land of sorts in that it's changed a little bit in the last 2 years. But when it came out, when this notion of having these private exchanges, an option the states could have private exchanges or they could follow the federal program or whatever, there were some really interesting, it was interesting reading about, like, Kentucky, for instance, which had arguably one of the most successful state-level implementations of Obamacare. And yet, for political reasons, a guy was elected, the current governor, was elected on the sole promise. I mean, the major issue of the whole election was, I'm going to go in there.
Let's kill this thing.
I'm going to blow it up.
Yeah, we did this really well. Let's destroy it.
It went well, but because of what it is and how it came to us, I'm going to kill it. And he did. And the voters overwhelmingly elected and reelected him. So the voters wanted that, or at least they said they did.
Right.
And that's kind of what you were talking about. Sometimes, you know, what if there were examples of this working that we didn't get to really, that didn't really materialize for some political reason?
My progressive friends often come back and say, well, Chuck, I get where you're going at, but like, civil rights, it just won't work. You know, Kentucky will disenfranchise all its poor and minority voters, and then you'll just get governance by the rich for the rich. And there's a part of me that's like, okay, I can see, like, I get that. I can see that. You know, and I certainly would not like disband civil rights legislation and the Justice Department. And I'm not, but I also, on the other hand, I think a lot of times progressives feel the need to like save us from ourselves. Like, you know, I know the right outcome for you. You may not know it yourself, but like, I know it. And I'm going to lead you in that direction, whether you want to go or not. And I mean, you're raising boys. I can lead my daughters in the direction I want them to go, but nothing's going to teach them as much as them like stubbing their toe and figuring it out. And then dad doesn't look so dumb, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that part of where we're at in our democracy is we've wrung as much as we can out of centralizing things. And we actually, the pendulum needs to swing a little bit the other way. We need to actually go back and say, okay, we're going to agree that everybody in this country should have health care. Like, I'm willing to sit here. Like, my compromise would be, like, I'm willing to agree that in a country with as much wealth and affluence as we have, nobody should be denied medical care. Like, I'm totally with you on that. The question becomes, like, how do we do it? And I don't think you and I would agree on, like, how we should do it. No. So to me, I'd like to see, like, the state of Minnesota figure that out and the state of Wisconsin figure that out.
But this kind of gets at with Obamacare and or Medicare for All or single payer, whatever you want to call it. And Obamacare wasn't single payer. But what if a majority of the population elects a government that wants to do something? Let's say at the state level. Let's take the federal level out of it. What if we elect a single-payer Minnesota care government?
Right, right.
Which could happen.
Right. No, very much could happen. We might have it now.
We might have it now. Right. Well, not with the Senate, but a little twist of fate, and that could happen. And what if they do that? What if they create that system?
Right.
If it worked,
right,
would the next government that's either mixed or let's say it flips all the way over to Republicans, would they keep it or would they destroy it? And why would they destroy it?
Let's
get into this.
Let's see. Republicans were elected with overwhelming majorities in the U.S. Congress under one, really.
In 2016.
Under two ideas. One, build the wall. And two,
repeal
Obamacare. Neither of which got done because there was no, like, you know, build the wall was dumb and Obamacare was like, they didn't have an alternative.
They didn't have an alternative.
And people freaked out because they're like, okay, well, I don't like this, but you're taking it away. And now what do you do? And so what I hear you saying is that let's say that we did something and it worked in Minnesota and it worked really great. And Wisconsin does something and Iowa does something and the Dakotas do something. And then we, for whatever reason, because we are pathological voters, decide that we're going to elect a totally different government that promises to come in and undo this thing that is working spectacularly amidst this like sea of other states that are doing things that, you know, are working maybe better or worse than what ours was. And that's just going to be like the final outcome. No, this is, I guess I am embracing the messy. The idea that like what we've got now is not working and there's no real compromise path to make it work. Here's a compromise path. And I'm not delivering or like promising like perfect outcomes everywhere. what I'm promising is like diet and exercise. Like, here's an actual way where you advance. Here's an actual way where it goes. So yeah, you may get a really good system, and then the next time voters vote it out. But then I would hope that they would come back at some point and say, you know what, that thing kind of worked. And oh, by the way, Wisconsin did that, and it's working really well for them, and we're losing population to them, and da 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 da. Maybe we should go back to that. And like the majority of voters, which are pretty smart people, might say, you know, I think we could do that.
I suppose what I'm really concerned about, because I just described two perfect scenarios, an all Democratic Minnesota legislature and governor that passes and implements a particular idea.
Yeah.
And then it's repealed by an all Republican.
Right. Which deal. Would happen on some issues. There's sure. no doubt about it. Right.
But what I guess, and this gets at the notion of compromise and what we've struggled with in this whole discussion, is the reality is many times for various reasons, the way the districts are drawn, other issues that enter the fray, political traditions, other cultural factors that are mixed in, the likelihood is you get a mixed, weird group of people and then a hyper-partisan environment that doesn't allow deal-making, like on Obamacare. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the best things that could have happened after Obamacare was passed and Republicans gained the House and Senate was for Republican reforms to the idea be implemented and worked on. But the selling point was repeal. And they said repeal and replace, but they never did offer a replacement. And there's probably a corollary on the other side that could be the same way. What maybe it's immigration, maybe it's border security. But this is the part where I'm a little disturbed. And if I'm watching this and I want this thing to happen, if we believe it's a national goal to, like you say, have everybody with access to healthcare, or I'm trying to think of another one. You mentioned civil rights earlier. This is another concerning one because state of Georgia was a really good example. They were one of the states that in the Civil Rights Act were prohibited from changing their voting systems without some federal approval because of the history of civil rights violations. Well, that gets repealed at the Supreme Court, and that's no longer the law. And so Georgia, in a very competitive election, in an election in which the Secretary of State is running against an African-American state senator, changes its voting, the locations of its voting facilities, or reduces the number of voting facilities, and it disproportionately affects African-American populations, just like the law was written about. I'd have an easier time accepting the experimental notion of all this if it weren't so dang on the nose with what happens in these situations. And conservative states elect conservative legislators who don't care as much. Their priorities, I shouldn't say that. Maybe that was a harsh way to put it. But the priorities are different. The priorities aren't the same as in terms of empathy towards poor people or people who have been historically oppressed, for instance, which are classic liberal issues to be right. concerned about. And vice versa, whether it's the business community or
progressives aren't worried about keeping things running.
Right, right. They're going to be an impediment
making
to
things
business.
Work.
They're going to suffocate our military readiness or our or economic well-being or whatever the case may be.
Right.
You know, the thing that the conservative side of this argument would be worried about we can predict these things, and we're watching this by demographics, by location. We're looking at college education and all these different metrics that we can measure, and we see people behave electorally, democratically, exactly like you'd expect them to behave.
Right. I'll say, I'm going to repeat what I said a little bit ago and then like expand on it. Cause I said, I'm embracing the messiness of it. Mm-hmm. And I say that intentionally because I'm not pretending that all outcomes will be good. What I am saying is that, how do we reach better outcomes? I think part of reaching better outcomes is to, along the path, have at times lesser outcomes. Instead of having like one big pass-fail experiment, we've got a bunch of, you know, marching experiments going on. One where we have, like I said, in my compromise, centralized values, centralized goals, centralized reporting. You know, I think the example in Georgia, I'm modestly familiar with it. I'm not going to challenge your characterization of it. But, you know,
I definitely took it from the liberal point of view.
I know. I've heard like in an ancillary way, two points mm-hmm. of view on it. But let's take the liberal point of view as like, let's say that's exact. It was a total disenfranchisement of African Americans. My idealistic hope for a less centralized system would be that those kind of things would, in a sense, not be tolerated and would over time be rectified. I think that you could say, well, the only way that'll be rectified is I have a big, huge central government who manages all this. And I'm like, okay, but the downside of having a big, huge centralized government that manages all of it is that you reach stalemate. You can't make simple fixes. You get someone who you really hate and don't like running the whole thing. And then you can go backwards 50 years in one. That's the downside of it. I would rather have, the idea that a state here, a state there would do something I think is dumb or don't agree with, but hopefully like 10 states would do things that were really good that I think would be great that we could learn from, and we would all progress together.
You ever see on Highway I-35 the paint test strips?
Yeah,
where they put the different kinds of road paint.
Yeah.
Stripe paint.
Oh. Dude, I did some of that when I was an undergrad.
Oh, did you?
Oh, sure.
Oh, wow. I'm learning things.
Well, that was, since I'm a civil engineer.
So I was using it metaphorically.
On Highway 94.
But tell me about it.
Well, on Highway 94, they have the whole Min Road by Monticello there. Uh-huh. That's like two alternate roads. You go two alternate highways. And on the one, they put different pavement types down and different striping types down. And then they'll run 20,000 cars over it for, you know, a day for 6 months, and then they'll go back and test it and see how it did. They got little sensors in there all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the reason I bring it up is that's fascinating that you worked with it, what you're describing, and the best encapsulation of what you're describing for me would be like these paint strips.
Right.
In that we don't just try one kind of paint on the roads and everybody uses all that paint all the time. And then if it fails, we have to repaint everything.
Or accept that it's just junky paint.
Right.
Right.
But that we can actually test this ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I buy into that entirely.
Yeah.
And I guess the flip side, the we talked about the history and how America has been, you know, teetering between one thing, the one worst case scenario or the other worst case scenario from the beginning. And we've more or less teetle-toddled our way to the future in that fashion. The flip side of the experimental thing is that we not forget that it's human beings and people that are being experimented on.
Right.
And that's, I think, my only concern about that, because if we were just playing with a video game, I think you and I would probably have a hell of a lot of fun playing with this and trying our different approaches.
If this were a SimCity simulation.
Yeah.
But I do think that this is the fundamental, and I don't want to zing you here, so I'm gonna give you like.
So you're gonna put a cork on that zing.
I'm gonna give you a zing warning. I do think that this is one of those like progressive conservative kind of, you know, mm-hmm. dividing lines.
Oh, I agree completely with that.
But I do think like progressives are like, we can't experiment with people, so we have to do it all at the federal level, you know, where basically like our progressive values will come through. Not recognizing A, that is an experiment, you know, it's just an experiment on every, like we're all being experimented on equally. But I think B, also not recognizing the fact that it's us governing ourselves at the state level. It's not like it's not like we are writing legislation for Wisconsin to see like, well, let's try this on them. Mm-hmm. Let's shock them a few times and see what the outcome is. Yeah. It's like we're governing ourselves. And that's where when we reduce the federal government to Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi, and Mitch McConnell, this is just a huge experiment on 300 some million people with basically like a handful of people in charge and a bunch of lobbyists. That's a terrible system to me, especially for progressive values. I would much rather be self-governed at the local level and just kind of left fending myself with my, you know, 13,000 neighbors in Brainerd to figure it out than to basically have these unreachable, unanswerable, unaccountable people running things.
I'd like to know, and this is maybe where I would leave it, is I'd like to know more about that. Because I think it's kind of like, you know, one of those, if we could just try something and maybe something better would come along if we tried some things. And I guess I'd like to know what on earth and what mechanism would get people, let's say specifically Republicans, for instance, on healthcare, since we were just talking about that. My goodness, can we get a Republican bill that isn't just a chop and keep pre-existing conditions and then chop out all the mechanisms of the bill and basically go to the status quo that we had before? Can we get a bill that gets us closer to more people being covered? I that's the frustration. And I'm sure, to pre-zing myself, that there are things that could come back the other way, whether that is, for instance, what's the long-term sustainability of large federal programs and what if we can't pay for them? We're looking at that with Medicare and with you know, some of these big programs, and as what happens when America gets older and the economics of everybody's paychecks changes and the number of people, we're already seeing it, the number of people who are in retirement age with no retirement savings and getting worse, not better. What are we going to do then with these federal programs? And that's legit. I'll accept that as a definite thing we have to think about, but I'd like, maybe this is a case where I'd like to know more about what, I'd like to see what some of these people we elect, here in 8th District, we elected Pete Stauber, Republican. He's a minority member of the House. And I got to say, he's been doing a fantastic job of being a modern congressman in his first few weeks here in office. He has been saying very nice things. He looks great.
Yeah.
He's meeting with people.
He's setting himself to be reelected.
Yeah, and he's probably
not taking a paycheck.
Yeah, not during the shutdown. So he's being a model modern congressman,
right?
Easily paving his path to reelection. But I don't know.
That has nothing to do with legislation.
But I don't know bills, a thing he's going to propose.
Right.
You know.
But you don't have to propose anything.
I know.
You don't have to be on any. You don't. Right.
That's the problem I see.
Yeah.
And it's not exclusive to one party. We can argue that because the Republicans have been, as we said before, compromise has been bad for them. So they've been more akin to not, or more likely not to compromise. And that's created the situation we're in. But I'd really like to know, and I'd really like to know what Democrats who say that they want a solution, what they're going to propose too. And I had all those notions of, like I said earlier, the West Wing notions that I've had fantasies, Chuck, where you and I, people like
we're
can enter the
chaos,
halls.
Chaos of, reigns, and you and I are appointed tribune, and, joint tribune.
Yeah, right. And we are it's like the cop, the buddy cop drama or the buddy cop comedy.
Yeah.
Where you know he likes things neat and he's kind of messy and
I'm assuming you're fighting crime too.
We're fighting crime, yeah, solving crime. A problem, yeah, exactly. Exposing a caper, uh-huh. You know, whatever it is, and that maybe people like us could do it. But honestly, I'm a little jaded right now, and I don't know what even two people who otherwise who are willing to cooperate can do.
Let me close by asking both of you, and I'll answer this myself too. This question: How long do you think the current shutdown will go on?
I was going to say we could do a prediction here.
Yeah, yeah. I
think well, do we want to say the date of when this is being recorded?
Yeah, it's January 8th.
January 8th.
Okay.
And you'll be hearing it in a little bit.
Yeah. And this will be on the website, in a week and a half or so.
Week and a half. Okay, so middle of January you'll be hearing this. I will bet that we're still in this shutdown.
You see, let's say by the 20th, we're still in it.
I think we will be.
Okay.
I'm willing to go to the end of January.
The end of January. Okay.
State of the Union's when?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
I guess it's
like around the 15th or 20th.
I think he takes it.
Yeah.
Close to the State of the Union, if not past.
Huh. Okay. Heidi, you have a sense?
I'm gonna say I don't know where to go with this. I'm just gonna speak contrary. I'm going to say the end of this week.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. I actually was going to lean towards where you're at. I actually think it might be resolved in the next like 48 hours.
And I don't think it's going to be dramatic.
This is fun.
I think it's going to, you know.
I do think, now, follow-up question, do you think that we'll get, there'll be a wall? Like, it will Trump, let me ask this, and this one will not be answered like this, but do you think, like, within the next 60 days, Trump will say, we have a wall, or we're building a wall, and here's, like, the mechanism I'm doing it? Basically, because I don't think Democrats will do anything that gives him a wall.
I'd agree
with
that.
But he'll find another way.
Which is why I'm betting on the longer shutdown. But it is possible that he does something through executive order, which would be very, I mean, this, we didn't even get into like executive orders and how this is getting tricky. But I think that would be a deal where he could do something and it would get challenged in the courts.
Right.
But it would probably get mired in the courts for a while, and that in the meantime he might sign the deal that the Senate and the House come up with.
Right. Because I mean, I've heard floated, we're going to say it's a national defense thing, securing the border is a defense thing.
Yeah, so it's an emergency. He's involved the military. Right. Like the military could get involved on this somehow. Right.
So I kind of, to me, in the absence of Trump, like, let's say that this was a policy of George W. Bush, like, I want increased border security. I think there's a compromise to be made here.
Sure.
And you would get what would be a wall. It might not be like a big concrete wall with guard towers and
there'd
stuff.
There'd still be large areas where it's not practical to put a wall, and there's
and it's not necessary.
And
right.
It's not necessary.
And the drones.
Well, like, this is the thing that drives me nuts, mm-hmm. is that Republicans and Democrats, or nonpartisans, even add into that category a lot of people who work in, you know, high ends of the law enforcement and military don't necessarily identify with a party. They might kind of identify with their institution, but you can't find an expert who says building a wall will help border security. You know,
right.
You know, right. And this is the thing that's so maddening about
Or change immigration rates,
right? Or
legal or illegal,
right? Because that's not how illegal immigrants come into this country,
right?
I mean, we have this vision, and this is why Democrats have dug their feet in, because it's a flawed, arguably a racist vision of hordes coming over the border, there's elements of that. And during peak immigration, some years earlier, there was some of that notion of people fleeing over an unguarded border. But most people who are here illegally have overstayed a visa and have entered legally, or have entered illegally through on a
some
road
means,
or on a plane or on a boat. And
I was going to do a zinger, and then I'm going to back off.
Okay.
Because I do think that...
I appreciate your zinger warnings, Chuck. It's been very helpful for me.
Well, there's a bell over there. We could have done that.
Oh, yeah, we could have. Yeah. I was going to say, and this, because I think this is a cheap shot, because...
I'm fully prepared for it now.
No. The one of the primary arguments is that this is a waste of money. Mm-hmm. Like, the Democrats are like, we won't waste money on something that would be ineffective. And I'm like, to me, that's like the very definition of being a Democrat, is like, I'm willing to spend money on lots of things and see.
Well,
but let me zing back.
I'm not even going to.
Republicans are worse than this now. I mean, there's no fiscal restraint amongst Republicans. So let's not pretend.
I know a lady who grew up in the Pendergrass machine in Kansas City, the Democratic political machine in Kansas City, and they literally paved a river to basically benefit the people who make the concrete and to put people to work and all this.
Yeah.
You know, and like, that's kind of what you're talking about.
Well, I'm saying if it came down to, like, Democrats can get all the immigration reform they want if they just give $5 billion to the Ronald Reagan memorial statue in wherever, they'd be like, they might do that in a heartbeat.
And you're starting to see fractures, like, I'm from the range, so Iron Range DFL. I'm starting to see DFLers float things on social media like, you know, well, what if we made an enormous U.S.-made steel wall that had union labor and was all American iron range iron used in every inch of it. And what if it put people to work for 10 years and all this stuff? And it's like, well, if you're going to do that, if that's the reason we're doing it, well, hell, let's find something that we can all agree. At least it might be crazy, but let's do something that's actually going to, you know, do something.
But I mean, throwing away $5 billion to get the compromise you want is not, it for both parties is not like a crazy thing at the federal level.
At the federal level, no. I mean, at the state level, yes.
But the reason it won't happen is because it's Trump and the wall.
It's a symbol. Both sides see it as a symbol. And because it's a symbol, we can't move on.
Because we can't move on.
It's like, you know, what if, you know, you can't have a hunting season on eagles.
Right.
You know, you can't take stars off the flag and just have a big sad face on it instead. Because it's a symbol. And maybe what if you could, what if China paid us $1 trillion to put a sad face on our flag instead of the stars?
Would we do it? What if they forgave half our debt?
Maybe even better. And would we do it? And we'd say, no, because it's our flag. It's America.
Right.
And that's for Democrats and Republicans. Democrats, it's about the what they see as the racist ideology of wall-based politics.
No, it's true.
And Republicans view the wall, or maybe not all Republicans, but Trump certainly views the wall as a physical manifestation of a philosophy of border protection that will, as he says, repel people as they have throughout history, despite the fact that that's not true. Great Wall of China. He's always talking about the Great Wall of China. It's the one wall that definitely didn't work. But anyway, I'm getting on a little bit here. But
I was at in California this past weekend, at one of the things we did, we went to California Adventure Theme Park, which is a Disney park, and they have this ride called Soarin', where you're flying in a plane over top of different landscapes, and one of them is China, and you're flying along
over
the Great Wall.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I've done this ride before, and now I'm on this ride, and I'm with a bunch of, very, like, well-read, modern, you know, like, policy kind of geeks.
Yeah.
And the whole, like, place erupts with, there's a wall that works, and it's, you know, like, look at that wall, not keeping anybody out with that one. So yeah, we have debased every conversation we could possibly have in this country.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I think it's, we're going to talk one of these times, not yet, because it's offensive to even talk about it yet, in my opinion. But the whole, like, 2020 Democrat primary conversation, and I don't mean offensive like it cuts to my core, but like, we should not be talking about this. I mean, give us like 6 months before we got to talk presidential politics, you know, at least.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
All right, next time you need a title for your buddy cop movie. All right, next you got to
chips. What was it? We'd have to do like potato chips or something.
That's accurate. Perhaps a
Pringles.
Carbs.
Yeah,
carbs. Carb cops.
they go to holiday and get their Mountain Dew and then go fight crime.
That's there right. We go.
Uh-huh.